It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Mali puts hundreds under Ebola surveillance. DRC police accused of extrajudicial killings. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Mali has placed nearly 600 people under surveillance suspected of having been exposed to Ebola. The West African nation is struggling to contain a minor outbreak of the deadly virus after three people, including a Guinean imam, died in recent days. President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita Monday visited the country's border with Guinea to see efforts to control the spread of the disease. He told residents he's actively commanding the fight against the disease and urged residents not to cross the border without first a health check and washing hands. Meanwhile, the French president's point man on Ebola is calling this a decisive week for Mali. He warns the handful of new cases could be the start of a new outbreak. Human Rights Watch has released a new report saying police in Democratic Republic of Congo's capital, Kinshasa, conducted dozens of extrajudicial killings in a three-month operation against organized crime gangs. It says Operation Likofi was launched last November with the aim of quashing an upsurge in armed robberies and other crimes. Ida Sawyers, a senior Human Rights Watch researcher.
Operation Likofi was often conducted in a very brutal and illegal manner. Police officers who took part in the operation conducted raids across the city, and in total, they killed at least 51 young men and boys and forcibly disappeared 33 others.
The rights group's report was based on interviews with relatives, police, and government officials. The group calls on the UN and international donors to pressure Congo into arresting and prosecuting those responsible. Mali has placed nearly 600 people under surveillance who are suspected to have been exposed to the Ebola virus. That's the hour's top news story. This is VOA News. Authorities in Burkina Faso have named former Foreign Minister Michel Kafando as the country's interim president, tasked with leading a return to civilian rule. A committee of politicians, army and representatives, and civil and religious leaders announced the selection of Mr. Kafando early Monday, a day after beginning talks to fill the post. Addressing reporters Monday, the new leader said his government will do all it can to bring about a successful transition. He says it's about credibility, it's about the future of our dear country. The 72-year-old Mr. Kafando formerly served as Burkina Faso's ambassador to the UN. The country's military seized power last month after longtime President Blaise Compaoré stepped down following protest against his efforts to change the constitution to allow him to run for re-election. Nigeria's justice minister says President Goodluck Jonathan will ask the National Assembly to extend the state of emergency in three northeast states, which expires this week. Troops were sent to Borno, Yobe, and Adamawa states in May of last year. Several hundred have died at the hands of the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. One of the country's most influential Muslim clerics, the Emir of Kano, is applauding vigilantes who have taken up arms against Boko Haram. Sanusi Lamido Sanusi, sacked earlier by the Jonathan administration as central bank governor, also doubts the military's ability to fight back. The army has retaken the northeast town of Chibok, occupied by Boko Haram last week for about 48 hours. Chris Stein has the story from Abuja.
Ayuba Chibok is an elder in Chibok. People he's spoken to described running in terror as Boko Haram arrived.
A lot of them who came to Chibok, some are using motorbikes, some are on these hillock vans, so they are shooting randomly everywhere.
Fleeing villagers spent days in the bush before they could reach neighboring towns. Some remain missing and unreachable because most cell phone networks in the area are down. Meanwhile, Ayuba Chibok says militants were torching churches in the town. He fears many people are dead. Chris Stein for VOA News, Abuja.
The long-awaited trial at the International Criminal Court of former Ivorian President Laurent Gbagbo for crimes against humanity is scheduled to get underway July 7th of next year. The 68-year-old Gbagbo faces four counts of crimes against humanity after refusing to accept defeat in the contested 2010 election. At least 3,000 people were killed in months of post-election violence. The World Health Organization says Africans, especially young people, are up to 13 times more likely to drown each year than are Western Europeans. The WHO says more than 370,000 people fall victim to drowning each year. It says children living near open water, including ponds, ditches, and irrigation canals, are especially at risk. Once again, the hour's top story, Mali places hundreds under surveillance suspected of having been exposed to the Ebola virus. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burkina Faso's new interim president will be inaugurated today, Tuesday.
The first thing they really like him to do is justice for economic affairs, economic crimes, justice for all the killings that have been done on the country.
Isaka Traoré is a member of Burkina Faso's civil society in charge of communication and information. We'll examine the impact of the Burkina Faso revolution on the longevity of African presidents in office. Mali is on high alert as new Ebola cases are confirmed. And Sierra Leone mourns the death of yet another doctor from Ebola.
We know he's now the sixth doctor that's actually died of this disease, which is a cause for concern to us as a nation.
Dr. Brahima Kabo is Sierra Leone's chief medical officer. Zimbabwe's first lady urges her husband, Robert Mugabe, to fire his vice president. And the World Health Organization says drowning is the leading cause of death for children and young people. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former Burkina Faso Foreign Minister Michel Kafando will be sworn in today, Tuesday, a day after he was unanimously chosen by an electoral college of representatives from the political parties, the military, and civil society and religious leaders. Isaka Traoré, a member of the civil society in charge of communication and information, says the civil society cast its vote for Mr. Kafando because of his experience as a diplomat and as someone who can manage the affairs of state.
First of all, the reason why he was accepted over the two other candidates is because of his experience as a diplomat and his experience in terms of managing the state affairs. Mr. Kafando is the first diplomat of our country. He served at the United Nations headquarters in New York for almost 15 years, and he was also at some time president of the Security Council of the United Nations. He was also a Minister of Foreign Affairs for our country, and all this background of Mr. Kafando has made him a prominent candidate compared to the two other candidates.
Some people say that Mr. Kafando was too close to the government of former President Blaise Compaoré. Did that not bother you people when he was chosen?
Thank you for your question. Indeed, we had some questions and concerns about Mr. Michel Kafando. In this regard, we did discuss from 6:30 p.m. to 4 a.m. last night. Whatever the fact that he was a former diplomat of the government of Mr. Compaoré was put it on the table. At the end of the day, despite the fact that he was close to Mr. Compaoré, based on the fact that we needed someone who has this international connection to help the country go ahead, so at some point we said, okay, we need to reach a consensus. Yes, we need to take the organization. Our consensus was very clear, but at the end of the day, for the interest of our country, we reached the consensus and we all agreed that there was a need for someone who has an expertise in managing state affairs. Mr. Kafando is the man for the job.
What would the people want from Mr. Kafando, the Burkina Faso people who demonstrated in the street? What is the first thing they would like for him to do?
The first thing they really like him to do is justice. Justice for economic affairs, economic crimes, justice for all the killings that have been done on the country, and last but not least, to really reform a lot of effects and legal affairs to make sure that our country is going back to a real and true democracy. In this regard, based on the interview we had with him, he promised that he will have in mind the fact that the revolution, the people of the Burkina Faso, went on the street. Some people lost their lives for an ideal, for a goal, for a philosophy, and he promised to meet this and to be really aware and concerned about the interests of the grassroots people. For us, as civil society organizations, we say that, okay, no problem, we go for it because this is the consensus that is needed, and then we hope that we will keep his word, we will respect his word, otherwise then the population is going back to the streets.
Isaka Traoré is a member of Burkina Faso's civil society in charge of communication and information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Ouagadougou. For several years, analysts have predicted a sub-Saharan African version of the Arab Spring. The debate was revived again with the forced resignation of Burkina Faso's President Blaise Compaoré earlier this month. But as Anne Locke reports from our West Africa Bureau, analysts say Burkina Faso is not a spark that will ignite other revolutions, but rather a symptom of the shift already happening across the continent.
Two terms in office, that's all you get. Analysts say Burkina Faso is just the most recent country to send this message to African heads of state. Burkinabe opposition leader Ablaise Ouédraogo says it's time the African Union makes it official. Ouédraogo says people say Burkina Faso could be a model for Africa, but we say that the African Union should review its text and incorporate into its charter the obligation of heads of state to respect their constitutions. He says above all, those texts should stipulate that each head of state coming to power gets just two terms. He says that will strengthen democracy on the continent. For years, African presidents, including Blaise Compaoré, have tinkered with constitutional term limits with few consequences. Director of the Center for Constitutional Law in Benin, Frederick Joel Ivo, says the thinking in legal circles is shifting to two-term limits. He says a constitution is designed to be revised, to adapt with the times. But African states have also set certain provisions in stone, things like the secular and republican nature of government. He says that means there will be no Kingdom of Benin or Islamic Khalifa of Senegal. He says presidential term limits should be added to that list of untouchables. The two-term message has been delivered in a variety of ways. In Benin, the Constitutional Court in 2011 said term limits could not be revised. In Burundi this year, the president couldn't get enough votes in parliament for a revised constitution. In Niger in 2010, it was a military coup that ousted President Mamadou Tanja after he pushed through a constitutional referendum to extend his current mandate and remove term limits. In Senegal in 2012, it was the ballot box that ousted President Abdoulaye Wade as he sought a third term. He had changed the constitution during his first term, which he then argued didn't count against the new two-term limit. Civil society and opposition politicians held months of sporadic protests. Wade was voted out. And now Burkina Faso, the continent with the youngest population in the world, has some of its oldest leaders, hanging on from an era of dictatorship and dynastic rule. Anne Locke, VOA News, Dakar.
Mali is on high alert after authorities in Bamako confirmed the fifth case of Ebola in the country. On Monday, Malian President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita visited a treatment center where Doctors Without Borders is receiving patients. Katerina Hoyer has more for VOA from Bamako.
It didn't look good. Three people, all showing symptoms that should have led medical staff to suspect Ebola, all died at the Pasteur Clinic, one of Bamako's best and busiest hospitals. It wasn't until health officials in neighboring Guinea alerted Bamako authorities that one of the deceased was a Guinean imam that the Ebola rapid response team was sent to Clinic Pasteur. The Muslim leader had traveled to the Malian capital in late October. When Dr. Sambaso, who heads the Ebola response in Mali, arrived at the clinic, he found that two of the hospital's staff members, a 25-year-old nurse and a doctor, were already isolated after showing symptoms. Authorities immediately put the entire clinic, its staff and several patients under quarantine. Over the weekend, volunteers and medical staff searched for over 500 people thought to have a contact with the imam and a nurse. The number of contacts is likely to rise in the coming days, says Dr. So.
La bonne nouvelle est que le nombre de contacts augmente.
The first day we had less than 100 contacts, he says. Then there were 180. It quickly rose to 442, up to now when we have identified 552 contacts. I told my team this morning to not rest until I find all of them. By the end of this week, I expect we'll have identified over 1,000 people. The rising number of possible contacts is good news, says the doctor.
Vous savez, en matière de gestion d'une épidémie comme Ebola, il y a deux choses.
The key to contain and fight Ebola is to find as many contacts as possible and then make sure they're isolated and monitored, he says. On Monday, President Keita visited a treatment center where Doctors Without Borders is receiving and treating suspected and confirmed cases. One patient is already here, the doctor from the Pasteur Clinic. All measures are being put in place. We're doing everything we can to step up efforts. I'm confident we will erase Ebola in Mali, said the president. The male nurse was admitted to the hospital and later died. Doctors say new cases should begin to present themselves 2 weeks after the male nurse was admitted. 100 health workers and volunteers are currently looking for people thought to have had contact with the nurse in one Bamako neighborhood. Mali's Red Cross are busy training more staff. Many Malians are questioning the government's response. President Keita is warning all Malians to take Ebola seriously. We know that Ebola exists. We also know that it's an extremely deadly disease. It's transmitted mainly through body fluids, such as blood, sweat, and vomit. But we also know how to avoid transmission, and the most important thing you can do is to wash your hands, says President Keita. This is Katrina Haye for VOA News in Bamako.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 18th, and please send your comments and viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Sierra Leone Chief Medical Officer says the death of Dr. Martin Salia from Ebola is of concern to Sierra Leone as a nation because Dr. Salia was the fifth doctor to have died from the virus. The Nebraska Medical Center said in a statement on Monday that Dr. Salia passed away as a result of advanced symptoms of Ebola. Dr. Brahima Kabo said although Dr. Salia is a surgeon, did not work directly with Ebola patients, he probably attracted the virus from other patients he was treating. That is why, Dr. Kabo said, the Sierra Leone Ministry of Health continues to plead with medical professionals to wear complete protective gears before examining any patient.
Actually, I have to be honest, Dr. Salia is a surgeon. He was not directly involved in actually managing Ebola patients. But the issue is, when somebody comes with signs and symptoms of diarrhea, vomiting, fever, you may not realize that it is Ebola until actually a test is done. So probably he may have contracted the disease while examining a patient at that particular point in time. We know he is now the sixth doctor that's actually died of this disease, which is a cause for concern to us as a nation. That is why we continue to actually plead with our colleagues. Even if this patient that comes to you is your relative, you should ensure that you personally protect yourself before ever you actually examine the individual that has actually come to you.
If you were to talk to Dr. Salia's immediate family members, what would you say to them?
Well, I'd like to extend my condolences and sympathy to the bereaved family. Dr. Salia, working surgeon, whom I admire so much, and he actually fell in the line of duty, which I believe God will provide for his family. At the same time, his soul, I'm sure, will rest in perfect peace. I know he contracted the disease while serving humanity. It's not a fault of his, because the way the virus is, you never tell how you actually contract the disease. The smallest mistake that you do as a physician, as a surgeon, that you would actually acquire the virus. I would actually just tell them to actually please be patient with us. We are doing our best to actually ensure that we slow down the spread of the virus in our country so that people like Dr. Salia may not also be infected just by barely examining a patient.
What is the update now, Dr. Kabo, on Ebola? The last time I think I was reading was one part of the region in one of your regions still heavily affected by Ebola.
Yes, we still have increased cases in Potloko, Bambali, and the Western area. Other areas for the past 3 to 4 weeks, they've registered zero cases or single-digit infections.
Dr. Brahima Kabo is Sierra Leone's chief medical officer. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Zimbabwe First Lady Grace Mugabe on Monday urged her husband, President Robert Mugabe, to fire his vice president, Joyce Mujuru, who has been accused of plotting to assassinate Mr. Mugabe. Thomas Chiripasi has details from Harare.
Addressing some university students and ZANU-PF supporters at Emazoe Orphanage, First Lady Grace Mugabe said Mr. Mugabe should now take action and dismiss his deputy after reports fingered there in a plot to assassinate the veteran president. The First Lady has on numerous occasions accused Mrs. Mujuru of corruption, incompetence, and selling out to the country's so-called detractors. Following a report carried in the Sunday Mail newspaper yesterday linking Mrs. Mujuru to a plot to assassinate the president, Mrs. Mugabe also stunned those who attended today's meeting that she has video evidence of Mrs. Mujuru also plotting to eliminate her, adding that the vice president was working with unnamed foreign countries to implement those plots. She added that Mrs. Mujuru should now face treason charges. Studio 7 contacted Vice President Mujuru for comment, but she said she could not speak since she was in a meeting. But she released a statement yesterday dismissing claims that she is corrupt. In her statement, Mrs. Mujuru said her hands are clean and she was determined to continue to work for the good of the country. On personal attacks that were launched against her by the First Lady and other ZANU-PF officials, Mrs. Mujuru said she had instructed her lawyers to deal with the matter. Reporting from Mazowe, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The World Health Organization says drowning is among the 10 leading causes of death for children and young people. WHO's first ever global report on drowning highlights measures that individuals, communities, and nations can take to prevent the vast majority of drowning deaths that occur each year. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the launch of the report in Geneva.
Authors of this global report call drowning the biggest epidemic of which no one has ever heard. And this appears to be borne out by the steady stream of unnerving statistics presented in this study. The World Health Organization reports every year 372,000 people lose their lives from drowning, and 90% of these deaths occur in low- and middle-income countries. The highest rates are in the African, Southeast Asia, and Western Pacific regions. The data show more than half of all drowning deaths happen to those under age 25, with the highest rates among children under 5 years of age. It finds males are twice as likely to drown as females. Dr. Etienne Krug is WHO Director for the Department for Management of Noncommunicable Diseases, Disability, Violence, and Injury Prevention. He says every hour of every day, more than 40 people drown in circumstances both mundane and catastrophic.
These are often children in bathtubs or in watering holes and rivers, fishermen doing their daily work that are carried out at sea, migrants looking for a better life but losing it in perilous crossings, and capsized ferries, which result also in the drowning of scores of passengers in one time.
WHO scientist and lead author of the report, David Meddings, notes that people in poorer countries often encounter water in more dangerous circumstances.
In most high-income settings, when we talk about interacting with water, it's almost always on a recreational basis. We go to bodies of water to swim at a lake. We jump in a pool to cool off on a hot summer day. The reality for many populations, particularly those in rural parts of low- and middle-income countries, is a very, very different relationship with water. They need water for household chores, for cooking, for washing, for bathing. They need water frequently to make their employment in the act of, you know, small-scale fisheries, etc.
Meddings notes that long-term trends show drowning rates have dropped dramatically in rich countries over the past 70 to 80 years. This is due to factors such as better emergency care and people having water piped into their homes instead of having to use a lake or river. WHO urges communities and governments to put in place a number of simple low-cost measures that it says would save many lives from drowning. These include installing barriers to control access to water, providing safe places such as daycare centers for children, teaching children basic swimming skills, and training bystanders in safe rescue and resuscitation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's coming up at 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Algeria, Egypt, Gabon and Ghana are confirmed contenders to host the 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations, the Confederation of African Football, CAF, revealed in Cairo, Egypt. CAF opened the bidding process in August after Libya, the designated hosts, withdrew on account of the security concerns in their country. CAF will name the successful bid next year. In Equatorial Guinea, the final draws for the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations will be conducted in Malabo on the 3rd of December. Following the weekend fixtures, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Gabon, Senegal, South Africa, Tunisia, Zambia, and newly named hosts Equatorial Guinea join Algeria and Cape Verde Islands among teams that have qualified for the 2015 Nations Cup. Meanwhile, hosts Swaziland and Tanzania drew 1-1 in a friendly played at Somhlolo Stadium in Lobamba on Sunday. Elsewhere, Morocco edged their Zimbabwean visitors 2-1 in a friendly in Agadir. Morocco outclassed Benin 6-1 in an earlier encounter at the same venue, while Tunisia's under-23 side beat their visiting peers from Qatar 3-1 in Tunis. Meanwhile, double Africa Youth Games swimming silver medalist Naomi Ruele is among five from Botswana who have received Olympic solidarity scholarships to help them prepare for the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics. Others who will benefit from the project are Olympic 800-meter silver medalist Nigel Amos, Africa 400-meter champion Isaac Makwala, and four-time Africa high jump champion Kabelo Hosimang, along with 400-meter runner Seribe Pako. In athletics, after hosting the World University Cross-Country Championships and the Africa Cross-Country Championships, Uganda seek to stage the 2017 IAAF World Cross-Country Championship. Their sole challengers in the bid are Bahrain. The IAAF named the successful bid in Monaco today, Tuesday. Finally, in Spain, Ethiopia's former world cross-country champion Iman Marga pipped his compatriot Mukhtar Edris in a photo finish to claim the men's crown at the IAAF Cross-Country Grand Prix meet in Atapuerco on Sunday. Ugandan Timothy Toroitich was third, while Ethiopia's Belianesh Olgira won the women's race from Kenyan Mercy Cherono. Moroccan Malika Asasa clinched the bronze medal. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Former Burkina Faso Foreign Minister Michel Kafando will be sworn in today, Tuesday, a day after he was unanimously chosen by an electoral college of representatives from political parties, the military, and civil society and religious leaders. Issaka Traore, a member of the civil society in charge of communication, told VOA the civil society cast its vote for Mr. Kafando because of his experience as a diplomat and as someone who can manage the affairs of state. An international human rights group says that police in the Democratic Republic of Congo have executed dozens of people in an anti-gang operation. Human Rights Watch says police in the capital, Kinshasa, killed at least 51 mostly unarmed young men outside of their homes or in markets to intimidate the population. It says police also are responsible for the disappearance of at least 33 others. The Nebraska Medical Center says the doctor from Sierra Leone it was treating for Ebola has died. The hospital released a statement on Monday saying Martin Salia had passed away as a result of advanced symptoms of the disease. That is it for this Tuesday, November 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer, James Harmon, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
What exactly is Ebola?
Can I catch Ebola through the air?
Are the people who have it contagious?
What is our government doing about Ebola?
What are the symptoms of Ebola?
You have questions about Ebola? Straight Talk Africa has answers. VOA presents Straight Talk Africa, Ebola. Knowledge is life. A special town hall meeting with leading experts on the front lines who will answer many of the questions surrounding the Ebola outbreak. VOA presents Straight Talk Africa, Ebola, Knowledge is Life. November 19th, only on VOA.
Hello,
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. And on Fridays, you can also hear my 30-minute show at 17:30 UTC. On the internet, like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Check voaafrica.com for the addresses and enjoy the show.